Remember when you couldn't order a ride at the press of a button? Or get online without hearing this? Or get Domino's delivered to over 150,000 unexpected outdoor locations.
Wait, what?
Introducing Domino's Hotspots. You can finally get pizza delivered right to the beach, the quad, or the dog park. Not at home? Not a problem. Find a Domino's Hotspot near you and get two medium two-topping pizzas delivered for $5.99 each. Two-item minimum handmade pan pizzas will be extra. Ask for this limited time offer. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary. Restrictions apply. Visit Domino's.com for details on Domino's Hotspots.
Okay, welcome into the latest Duly Noted podcast. Thanks, everybody, for the kind words about us getting back on this. And I know it's a little different because with the commercials that we have, but it's kind of cool, you know, as somebody would say. Not me, but you remember that guy. Hey, you know what? Here's the thing. And yet, you know, we get on a plane, then we get on a bus. All right, so just got back late last week from going to the Panhandle. Always love the trip. Man, I love that area out there. And the people treated me incredibly well at both Destin and Pensacola. And my friend Angie Sapp, who was my host in Pensacola and a longtime friend of ours, told me she listens to the podcast when she goes for a walk. So the longer I make it, the longer she walks. So I guess I should go hard today, you know, just but we do have a special guest coming up, Tate Casey, now the sideline announcer for Gator football for the radio broadcast. And, of course, a great player here, probably underappreciated player because there was so many others, whether it was C.I., Cornelius Ingram, or Aaron Hernandez at that position. But he did really well. And, of course, the famous jump pass. We'll ask him about that. All right. When I was on this little circuit, and while I was doing it, I did a lot of radio, too, and that, you know, is a big part of trying to pay back for all the years that I was on radio, some of the different hosts. You know, there was a bunch of questions that kept coming up, and I'll try to answer some of them for you here right now. One question, obviously, was about the quarterbacks. Now, it's so hard for us to tell you. You know, everybody keeps asking me. You walk into a convenience store. You go to the laundry. You go to the golf course. Wherever you go, people are always asking, who's the quarterback? Who's going to quarterback? And I really have given this answer of, I don't know that I care who the quarterback is, because I've always taken the philosophy of the coaches will figure it out. Now, if you have confidence in your coaching staff, you're cool with it. If you don't, then you don't think they can figure it out. So whoever it ends up being, I'm good with. And there has been a feeling that maybe Felipe Franks has taken a little bit of the job over. I think his experience is going to pay off. I think the fact he's been in games. But who knows? And the bottom line is, guys, whoever the starter is, I mean, this isn't like the Spurrier years. And even the Spurrier years, we saw revolving quarterbacks. But in the Spurrier years, it was a big deal who he named to be the starter. A much bigger deal in my mind. For example, when Terry Dean was the starter, was named the starter before 93 after Shane. When Shane was named the starter, it was a big deal. When Terry Dean was named the starter, I remember we had a special section. We had the headline was, it's Dean's team now. And, of course, by the middle of the year, he was out. You know, going forward, it was the whole – I remember being in the stands. Believe this is how crazy things have changed. Sitting in the stands with Steve Spurrier watching a scrimmage in the swamp, and it was Grossman versus Berlin. Who was going to win the job? And I wrote a column afterwards saying it's got to be Grossman. He's clearly the better guy. And the next day they announced Grossman as a starter. And, of course, he had a great year, and Brock Berlin ended up transferring. But now it almost feels like, because we've just seen so many guys get hurt or benched, that whoever the starter is for opening day isn't the story. The story is, who is the starter when they play Georgia? Who is the starter when they go to Starkville? That's the story. Who starts against Charleston Southern is almost meaningless. Now, what it will tell you is who had the better camp. And for all we know, Coach Mullen is going to come to us and say, hey, guys, here's the deal. We're going to play them all. We're going to play them all. I mean, obviously, with Emory Jones, you can play him four games because of the new redshirt rule. With Kyle Trask, he needs experience, game experience. And with Felipe, I think he needs to get his feet wet again in a real game. I expect them all to play in the first game. And then we go to the second game, and that is a bigger story. That, just to backtrack from what I said earlier, the big story is not who starts a quarterback against Charleston Southern. The big story is who starts a quarterback against Kentucky, because that's a big game. So we'll see. Obviously, it's going to be an ongoing story. Guy sprains his ankle. Now he's not the starter. Guy has a bad game. Will Dan Mullen pull him? You know, if you go back to the Urban Meyer years, there was never really any question about who the starter was going to be. You knew his first year was going to be Chris Leak. Chris Leak was a junior quarterback, a five-star guy who had shown that he could throw the ball and had talent. They had to teach him how to be more vocal and everything like that. In year two, even with Tebow coming on board, you knew Chris Leak was the starter. In year three, you knew Tim Tebow was a starter, and there was never any question, even though you had Cam Newton and John Brantley, and then the following year, you knew John Brantley was going to be a starter. There was never any question. There was never a story about who the starter was going to be during that entire time. Then, obviously, with Coach Muschamp, you had John Brantley as a starter, and then went to the whole Driscoll thing. Driscoll, will Brissett get a start here and there, you know, because of injuries? And then it just got crazy. It got crazy with Treon Harris. Remember the 10-9 win over, in fact, I texted Will, I think last year they beat Tennessee. And I congratulated him. He said, it's always 10-9 in Knoxville, because that game meant a lot to him, winning that game. But remember, they pulled Driscoll and went with Treon Harris. Okay, Florida's finally got their quarterback. We can't talk to them, but they finally have their quarterback. And by Monday, there was this huge story about an alleged sexual assault that ended up getting the charges dropped, but he didn't play. So, you know, right now I think we're all – and I talk about being scarred a lot, and maybe you're tired of hearing about it, and that's not going to end until the scars have healed or the scar tissue's been replaced by lean muscle. But we're all scarred in a lot of ways. And one way we are is that the quarterback situation has not been good for 8 years. We all know that. And who starts doesn't necessarily mean who finishes. Looking for a great real estate agent? Call Betsy Pepine at Pepine Realty. Betsy is a leader in North Florida real estate. Betsy spends hundreds of thousands of dollars yearly to attract the maximum number of buyers, so you get the most money for your residential or commercial property. She also offers a guaranteed sale program, so if she cannot sell your property for a price you agree upon, she will buy it. Call Betsy today at 352-226-8474 or visit PepineRealEstate.com. Got a lot of questions about special teams. The kind of joke I've been telling to these Gator clubs, and I'm sure I'll use it to more of them down the road, is that they looked it up in the rule books, and you are allowed to return a kickoff past the 20-yard line, and that you are allowed to block a kick. Look, special teams are going to be better. I know that. I have no doubt. If there's one thing, in fact, I kind of referred to the speaking tour that I've been doing, and I've got a bunch more coming up, as the I don't know tour, because I don't know. And we all can think we know, and expert opinions are going to come out. I don't know how good this team's going to be. It might be really good. It might not be very good at all. I don't know who the quarterback's going to be, and I don't know if he'll be any good, but he might be really good. I mean, I think their best receivers just got declared eligible, and Jefferson and Grimes, but I haven't seen them play in person. It's all kind of up in the air right now. I like the direction things are going, but I don't know. But one thing I do know is special teams will be better. Obviously, at kicker, they won't be better. At punter, they won't be better. But the special teams as a whole will still be better, even if they have an average kicker and an average punter, because they were so bad at everything else. And I think they have athletes now. Assuming there are no knucklehead nine situations out there, they've got the athletes to put them on special teams and do things. One of my biggest things about college football, things is not the right word to use there. My biggest mantras is that if special teams are a third, then play guys – If they're a third of the game, play guys who can make a difference on special teams. Don't play guys just to have bodies out there. And I think Coach Mullen's going to get that, and I think they're going to have schemes to block kicks. I mean, before, it was just like, well, especially when they had Callaway, it was like, let's just field the punt and see where how much he can do with it on his own. That's no way to go through life. No way to go through special teams. They're going to be better. I have no doubt in my mind about that. I got a question in Pensacola about, is Florida going to be run heavy because of all the good backs they have? Well, I hope not. I don't want to watch a run heavy team. I think we all want to see the ball go in the air a little bit. We want to see it, but we want to see it done right. We want to see receivers run good routes. We want to see guys get open. We want to see good plays. We don't want to see the same old bootleg roll out, throw it either to the tight end or the second guy. And if they're covered, just, you know, we don't want to see that anymore. We want to see some creativity on offense. We want to see some trick plays. So I hope they're not. I hope they're 50-50, which is what you're supposed to be. That's what makes you really good. That's what makes – if you step up to the line of scrimmage and nobody knows what you're going to run based on formation – you know, Steve Spurrier told me this, that when they would get up there to the line of scrimmage and they could look at the defense and know whether the play was going to work or not, especially in his early years, based on the defense they were playing, because he could tell. And that's the way – it's got to be that in reverse with Florida. It's got to be – that defense lines up against Florida, and they come out and they go, wow, this could be power run. This could be option. This could be read option. This could be a deep pass. This could be a short. You've got to have that mentality. You've got to have that as a possibility. So, again, a run heavy? No, I don't want them to be run heavy. They've got backs that they could, but, again, this goes back to the offensive line, which we've talked about a lot. The other question I got was about tight ends. And we're going to have to take Casey on here to talk a little bit about that. But the bottom line is tight end production was pathetic last year. They didn't use them in patterns. They didn't throw the ball to them. And they've got to make that a big weapon, and I think they will. I will say this. There's another area. I know Florida's going to be better. And if you add it all up, here's what Florida's going to be better in special teams. They're going to be better at tight end, and they're going to be better at being in shape. We all can say those. The rest of it, we'll see. We have no idea about the rest of it. Like, I think they might be pretty good on defense. They're going to take more chances. They're going to blitz. Again, they looked it up. You're allowed to blitz. But a lot of this goes back to the hunger factor. You know, it goes back to, are they hungry? They say they are, and that's great. And you want to, you know, every time we talk to guys, in fact, I saw in our story today, I think it was James Houston saying, you know, I've got a hunger. I'm hungry. I'm like, okay, you guys are all hungry. That's great. We get that you say you're hungry, but are you willing to do the things necessary to quell that hunger? Are you willing to go out there and continue to work hard? Because these are the dog days right now. The start of camp's always fun. The start of camp's, all right, here we are. I know it's hot, but we're finally out here. We put in all that hard work, and we're ready to go. We want to show off our new bodies. And you get to about 2.5 weeks out. You've gone through some scrimmages. You're maybe a little bruised and banged up. For the next week and a half, however many practices they have during that stretch, are the real dog days. When you get to game week, you know, you have a different mentality. You have a different structure. You have a different practice schedule. And this is the way it's going to be now for the next 13 weeks, minus the bye week. But so these are the dog days. And this is when you show that true hunger. Are you willing to do all the things you need to do? You know, I used to be a guy who didn't thought practice was just kind of, you know, a way to run trick plays and everything when I was a youngster. And it's a really sad story that how pathetic Robbie and I were, that we would drive over from St. John's River Community College after we got done with school and drive over. And because you could not get into practice under the Doug Dickey years, we would climb up to the top level of the stadium of the what is now the Swamp, Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, and look over the top and watch them practice. We just wanted to see the guys. We wanted to see what they looked like. We wanted to see what plays they were running. But now I've come to realize in my old age how important the little details in practice are. Are you willing? Now, I've had guys tell me, players tell me, look, we've got a coach and coaches who believe in the details. And they, but that was, don't forget, that was the motto last year, remember? Sweat the little stuff. That was Jim McElwain's motto. I don't think they sweated it as enough, obviously. But that is the key for any team. It's the key at Georgia. It's the key at Auburn. It's the key at Tennessee, anywhere. Do you do the little things? Do you put in the work necessary with the little things to be a great player and to be a great team? That's the hunger we're talking about. When you're, are you hungry enough to go out and do, okay, here's a little thing you have to do, and you have to do over and over again, and you have to do it right every time until you got it down and it becomes second nature? Are you willing to do that? A lot of guys aren't. A lot of guys go out there and go round off routes or peek at routes, or they go out there in the offensive line, they go, man, I'm tired. I'm just going to kind of go through the motions here. And you get guys hurt that way. So we'll see. But I talk a lot about the hunger because to me it is a big deal. It really is. Hunger is only important. It's only as hungry as you want to make it. We're all hungry, right? Very rarely are we not hungry. How many times a week are you not hungry? You right after you eat, maybe for a half an hour, and then you're kind of hungry again. I could eat. I could nosh. Are you hungry enough on every play of practice, on every film room? Are you going to pay attention? These are the things we'll find out. Because the thing is, what's the expression about film? Film don't lie, or, you know, football doesn't lie. It will tell us fairly early. Now, I'm not saying Charleston Southern. It will tell us, though, by the end of September. We are going to know whether this team's any good or not. It might be that it's kind of average. It might be that it's not very good. It might be that it's great. But we're going to know a lot more about it. There's no question about it. Couple things. I started doing these poll questions that are on Twitter. If you want to go on there and help me out there and answer, I know the first one I put out had over 2,000 responses. And this is for the column I'm going to do for our special section Sunday. Basically, about a dozen questions will be out there. So keep an eye out for those. And then the other thing is Florida has picked up a couple of recruits. And look, I'm not a guy that follows recruiting closely. We have Graham Hall to do that. And I also am a little sometimes it seems like it's too big a deal, even though I know it's how important it is. But, you know, getting the two guys they got, Chester Kimbrough was the last one, bump them up on the rankings to like 28th, but everybody's still freaking out about where they are ranked. Don't worry about it. There's stuff coming. I've been told that by sources close to me. They're going to be fine. They're going to get – no. Are they going to be Georgia good in recruiting? Not right now. They're not ready to do that yet. They're not – the brand is not strong enough for them to go out and get five or six five-stars, which is what Georgia's done. Georgia's doing a heck of a job. Georgia is what Florida needs to try to get to, and they're not there. They're not there in recruiting, and they're not there in personnel. They got a long way to go. Doesn't mean you can't beat them, though. That's what college football is. It's about upsetting somebody. It's about going on a run that you go, wow, I don't know how the heck that happened. 2006 is a great example. I still, when I think back, I how did that team win a national title? They were so flawed offensively. But when they did whatever they needed to do to win the game. Remember Tallahassee, tie game. Go down and win, get a touchdown, win the game. Well, obviously remember about the block kick. So I don't even know what point I was making. But anyway, it was a good one, I'm sure. Also, I voted in the AP poll. I had Florida at 24. I'm high on some teams that I probably shouldn't be as high on. Penn State's one. I'm a little higher in Miami, I think, than the coaches poll had them. I'm not as high on Georgia as some people are going to be. But really, I enjoy voting in the poll. This is my second straight year of doing it. I like doing it. But it is it's just for entertainment purposes only. It really is. And I look, I think it's important. I think people look at it and they may it adds to the importance of a game, even though it doesn't. You know, does that make any sense? Probably not. But it adds to the importance of the game. We go number 5 versus number 10. You go, oh, your ears perk up. I gotta watch that. Two unranked teams came into the swamp. It doesn't do it for you. Doesn't do it the same way. So it's important from that aspect, even though the coaches and the players really aren't that overly excited about it. But we'll see how it goes. Also, wanted to tip of the hat to Reggie Nelson and Lito Shepherd. There were a bunch of people put in the Florida Hall of Fame. They were the two football players, and people have asked me, why did it take so long for Lito? I think Lito is in the argument for best corner to ever play here. But, you know, I know what they've got to deal with there. They've got to deal with getting in all the athletes from all the sports, and sometimes a guy can get almost pushed to the side because as good as he might have been, we got to get this guy in. Now we got to get Rex Grossman in. But the fact is, he's going in, and that's great. And also to Kewan Ratliff, another – look, I would not mind lining up with Kewan and Lito as my corners. I'll take that right now. I don't have to consider anybody else. But they both graduated over the weekend, so congratulations to them. All right, we will take a break. We will come back. Tate Casey, former Gator and, of course, 2-time national champ, and now the sideline commentator for Florida Radio. We'll get him on, and we'll talk to him right after this break.
At Vistar, we believe in better, especially in helping build a better financial future for our members. So we've reviewed our offerings from the ground up. We've lowered or eliminated over half our fees and enhanced our already competitive rates, saving members more than $1 million this year, in addition to the millions we save them every year. If you believe that saving money is better, join Vistar. We never forget that it's your money. All loans subject to approval, insured by NCUA.
Okay, welcome back to the Duly Noted Podcast. A real pleasure to be joined right now by former Florida tight end and, of course, now the sideline guy for Florida football, Tate Casey. Tate, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Pat. How are you?
Good. Well, first of all, I mean, you beat out quite an illustrious field. I know some of the names. I'm not going to reveal them, but I know some of the names that were in the mix for this job to replace, first of all, Brady Ackerman. Those are big shoes to fill, right?
Oh, yeah. Brady did a great job. Did a great job.
I was being a little sarcastic.
I don't know what size shoe he wears. I can promise you, whoever comes after me is going to have some bigger ones to fill, because he's size 15 to hold some space.
What got you interested in this? Why did you think this would be a good fit for you?
You know, I've always kind of taken an interest to broadcast and journalism. This was kind of something that just came out of the blue, you know, something that interested me the first call that I got. And obviously to be around the program, be around football, it's something that, you know, since I left Florida, to be quite honest, it's been something that's been missing out of my my lifestyle. So, you know, it came out of left field, but the more I thought about it, the more it made a little more sense, just making sure that the scheduling and everything made sense for me and my family. It's just one of those things, you know. I think every football player that leaves football in some capacity likes to be around it in one form or another. So, and it's just one of those things I had to sit and think about. And once everything made sense, you know, just try and put my name in the hat and see what happened.
You got any nerves going into this, especially first game?
You know, what's funny is I think the biggest amount of anxiety I've got is just being back in the swamp for this much excitement.
Yeah.
And I think the more that surrounds the program right now in terms of just the anxiety for the season and the excitement that's been built around the Gator Nation right now is kind of at an all-time high. And I'd probably compare it to when Urban first got here, because we've always had good talent. The biggest thing is just seeing what that development does and what it creates on the field and how many wins it equates to.
Yeah, I'm sure it was hard for you, especially last year, watching this team then never throwing the ball to the tight end. So if the tight ends are good this year, then you should be able to take full credit for it.
Pat, it was hard for me when we didn't throw to him in 2008. Kidding.
No, but I mean, it's funny when you go back to that team and you think of the tight end talent on that team, and that was with CI out the whole year.
Oh yeah, and to be honest with you, we've had some good tight ends, over the course of the last 8 to 10 years. The tight end position has been some good talent. And, you know, it doesn't always fit creatively into the structure, whatever the offensive scheme may be. I would imagine that, Coach Mullen over the years, when he was first at Florida, now has probably seen the benefit of the tight end, an offensive scheme in the SEC. And it's not always the same in every conference, but, we've had some good ones roll through. I think we've got some great talent at the tight end position this year. And really one of the positions I'm most looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, and obviously you play for Coach Mullen and know what he's about as a person and as a coach. But, talking to Scott Strickland, talking to Dan, I'm seeing a different guy than we saw here 9 years ago, and I'm sure that you're going to see a different guy as well.
Yeah, and, I kind of expect that after 9 years as a head coach and kind of understanding a little bit more of a role and responsibility as a head coach versus an offensive coordinator and assistant. I think he's going to handle himself a little bit different. When you take on the responsibility of a head coach, you start to really open your eyes to the whole picture, what it takes to run a college program. And I'm sure, you're still going to get the fiery Dan Mullen because he has his moments where he's obviously a smile and he's always got a smile on his face. But you're also going to get those moments where he's got to get nitty gritty and get guys to perform. So, I'm sure he's learned a lot over the last 10 years. And having, what he did at Florida in his back pocket and his experiences in Gainesville, I think is going to be, nothing but good for him as he opens up this season.
It is kind of a different deal now to come back here when you – I wrote about this recently, that the Florida brand has been damaged a little bit, by 2 4-win seasons and some of the stuff that's gone on, certainly with player conduct and everything. But I get the impression you think this is about to go back the other way and head back in the right direction.
Sure. I mean, in my opinion, you'd have a hard time convincing me that, we're not going to be better than we were last year. I mean, I don't think anybody's expecting that, and I wouldn't expect to see it. Just based off the response and the reaction of players towards the off-season conditioning program, just the vibe around Gainesville and the program right now, there's a lot of stir amongst the players and the excitement. And it's just something that as former players, especially those guys from, Dan's first run in Gainesville, our biggest thing that we changed in that first off-season program wasn't necessarily being better football players. It was mental toughness was a huge, huge part of who we were in 2005. And, if you look back, we went from an 8-4 season under Zook in 04 to a 9-3 season in 2005. And we really should have won more game if you chalk up that South Carolina game on the road in 05. We didn't change a whole heck of a lot in terms of talent. We changed so much as individuals in the mental toughness aspect of the game. Where when fourth quarter comes around, you're always feeling like you're winning a game. There's no make or break moment. So I tell you, I look for these guys. The biggest thing I'm looking forward to this year is just the excitement and the sheer joy of playing on the field and these guys coming together as a team. And, under Dan and his staff, I know the rest is going to come. I mean, with the strength and conditioning staff and what they've been able to accomplish so far and what they will accomplish in the future, I think there's going to be a pretty good few years to come starting out this era.
Was that – how much of a culture shock was that when Urban walks in and the first thing he does is kick you guys out of the locker room in 2005?
I think it was a little bit eye-opening. For some of us, mind you, I was a freshman at the time. I didn't feel like, anyone owed me a thing. Just to be there in general was enough for me to kind of go out and grind each day. But I think to some of the guys, it took away that enabling mindset that, I'm at Florida, I'm on top of the world, these guys owe me whatever I want. And that changed really quick. But I think the biggest thing is Mick Marotti and his staff coming in. The culture shock wasn't necessarily in what Urban did as much as it was the strength and conditioning staff. And I think that was the biggest shock. And people call it, crazy ways of motivation. you know, maybe a little bit outside the box creativity to get guys to buy in. But us as players, I mean, we walked away from some of those workouts just, you feel it. I mean, you feel how good you're getting. You kind of feel how your body's changing. You feel the culture of the team and the, you know, the chemistry of the team kind of changes right in front of your eyes. And I'd imagine that that's exactly what's going on with some of these guys on the team. You know, maybe the mindset's completely turning over to the buy-in. And what happens with Dan is if you're not on that mindset, chances are you're not going to be around too much longer.
Yeah, I mean, the I wrote about this today. The hunger factor should be there, but we won't know until the season. I think you're in the same mindset. You're sitting there. You know that this team's got to be better. They've got themselves in better shape. But you know how a college football season goes. Handful of plays and a handful of games, and anything can happen. We just got to kind of watch and see what happens going forward.
Yeah, I agree. To a certain extent, I'll say that, you know, and I can only speak much to offense right now, just being, you know, part of Mullen and Gonzalez and Hevesy tripod that is right now. Back when we were playing, you know, I think the biggest thing for us was the chemistry being on the field and off the field, but it's a team effort, and if everybody does their job in this system, I mean, we're going to be in a good shape, good spot. And I look forward to the quarterbacks. You know, I'm sure everybody right now is looking forward to the quarterback situation, but I kind of dabble into it a little bit further. And what I don't hear a lot of conversation on is really regarding running backs and receivers. You know, we've had our battle receiver position in terms of crisp routes, being able to beat man coverage, learning how to leverage defenders and get open, which makes the quarterback's life easier. When you combine that with running backs blocking in the pass protection game, now tight ends also going to be a big part of that, and then blocking on the perimeter as a wide receiver. I mean, if you think back to 2006, 2008, even back in the 90s, some of our best receivers were guys that could hold down the perimeter, and, you know, that was the bulk of our 20-plus yard run plays, was being able to run on the perimeter and not have to change the personnel according.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about a time I interviewed Urban. It might have been 06, and I said, hey, it might have been 07. If a receiver can't block for you, what's the deal? And he goes, he won't play. And I just heard that from Billy Gonzalez just this week, the same thing. And you're right, though. People don't understand how important it is. And it's hard. You know, when you're a receiver, especially, and you might get three balls thrown at you in the entire game, but you've got to do your assignments.
No, absolutely. And if you want more than three balls, you better do your assignments well.
That's right.
I mean, it boils down to that. And if I'm a freshman right now, especially some of these, you know, skilled position freshmen, and I'll give a good example. Riley Cooper was probably one of the best examples that I could pull off the top of my head. Riley Cooper was a special team stud. And that was, you know, 06, Riley Cooper was probably one of our best special teams players that ended up being one of our best receivers. And in turn, he ended up being one of our best blocking receivers. And I still, to this day, I've never played with someone who blocked better on the edge than Riley Cooper. There's a lot of detail. There's a lot of attention to detail in what Mullen and his staff expect out of a wide receiver, whether it's in a pass game, in the run game, and even just taking routes, you know, taking the safety off the top. It all boils down to, can you do your job exactly the way we want it, and can you do it well? And then when your number's called, can you come through with the clutch plays we need you to make? And so that's really what I look for out of the receiving end of things, is it's not how fast or talented a guy is. Because I'm going to tell you right now, we've got some serious talent on the edge. I'm really just boiling it down to how many of those guys are not making mistakes. You know, because I think Dan's really going to put them in a position from an offensive mindset to succeed. I think he's going to have whoever that quarterback starter is right on cue, where he needs to be by the time season comes. And he's got to make sure those receivers are doing that. And I also think Billy Gonzalez and Coach FC, between the offensive line and receivers, going to do a great job.
All right, before I let you go, let's talk about the play. Going back to 06, you know I'm going to let you get away without talking about that. When that play call, first of all, what was that play called?
97 pop pass.
97 pop pass. That comes in, you go, oh, your eyes must have gotten a little big.
You know what's funny is I joke about this. I gave my mom a hard time a few weeks ago because she was giving a speech, accepting an award, and mentioned, you know, her kids, which she always does so well, and mentioned that her youngest son played Florida and blah blah blah, and was talking about his claim to fame as a jump back. I can't stand the claim to fame thing. I'll take it where I can get it. I had so many better plays than that ugly reception. I will, however, say that obviously it's significant because of the game, because of the situation. That play, we practiced so many times, and I can't tell you how many times I took mental reps on, because you know, you only get one chance at that. Mm-hmm. That's the type of play that you run it once. If it doesn't succeed, you don't run it again. So we repped it in practice. We did all that. And we did it about every look we could have got for whatever team we were going to play that week. And me and Tebow and Mullen would stay after practice and rep and rep and rep just to make sure that when we needed it and we pulled it out of the hat, it was going to be, you know, guaranteed. And we get in that game and we got a different look than we repped, you know, for 3 weeks straight. And it, you know, threw off the timing. I had to go through two guys on a play action, and Tim was hanging up in the air. And by the time that ball let go, I probably count about 2 hours in my head how long it took to get down. And mind you, the adjustment was the hardest part of that, which led to just the ugliest falling backwards catch you can imagine. And it really, that all boils down to that's what adds up in Gator's mind, right, the Gator fans' mind. They remember just the whole double clutch football up in the air, hanging, and I'm sure it hung for everybody about that long. But the coolest part about that was just the reaction. It's kind of been awesome to hear Gator fans that come up and say, hey, man, my son's first game was that jump pass in 2006, and, man, that was such a huge win for us, and blah, blah, blah. And honestly, I do love hearing it. It's good to be remembered for something than not have a memorable play or a memorable moment that people pull out of their hat. So I'm very appreciative for all those people and the fans that come up and talk about it. It's good. I've heard every story you can imagine.
I bet, yeah. Two-time national champion and now the sideline reporter for Gator Network, and we look forward to having him back in Gainesville. Of course, Tate lives in Jacksonville now, where he works in medical supplies, and we look forward to seeing him on the sideline. We'll be right back with more on the Duly Noted Podcast. You're listening to it at Gatorsports.com. All right, man, this one's gone a little long, hasn't it? Well, hey, you know, what else do you have to do? But one thing I wanted to talk about are the week one games. And this is a column I'm thinking of writing. And please tell me if it's stupid, okay? Because I also know that, like, there are two Pat Dooleys. Maybe I need to get on a psychiatrist's couch for this. But there are two Pat Dooleys. There's the one Pat Dooley, who's an unbiased journalist and tries to write the honest truth all the time and writes what his opinion is on a subject with no outside interest, no conflict of interest, just writing, here's what I think. Then there's the Pat Dooley who's a college football fan. And the Pat Dooley's a college football fan, often has to get turned off. But when I'm sitting home alone watching games, I have rooting interests. And I've perfected the art of the negative rooting. Here's how much of a negative rooter I am. I'm flipping around. I'm watching the Kentucky basketball in the Bahamas against some team from the Bahamas. And it's like a close game, and I'm into it. Negative rooting. And you don't have to guess who I'm negative rooting against. But it feels to me like things have changed so much coaching-wise in college football this year, I'm not sure who you root against. Like how do you root against Texas A&M because you hated Jimbo Fisher when he was at FSU? Like, I think he's going to do a good job, but I actually had A&M in my poll. I did not have LSU in my poll. I had A&M in my poll. Or do you say, hey, he totally stuck it to FSU. They all hate him there. Yeah, I like Jimbo now. Like when they play Clemson week two, are you an SEC guy? How are you going to root that game? And there's a bunch of them like that. Like Auburn-Washington. Like I think Auburn's been way too full of themselves for beating Alabama and then losing their last two games, somewhat disgracing the conference by losing to UCF. Or do you root SEC because you're an SEC guy? Tennessee, West Virginia. How do you feel about Will Greer? Do you still like the guy and feel like he got screwed here and he should be the Florida quarterback? Although I think by now he'd have probably gone pro if he was at Florida. And Butch Jones was a lot of the reason we didn't like the Kardashians, right? Jeremy Pruitt seems like a decent guy, you know? Haven't really developed a whole lot of hatred for him, but that Tennessee hatred doesn't go away. Who you root for there? The big one, though, and this is the one I'm conflicted by, Pat Dooley the fan, not Pat Dooley the writer, is LSU-Miami. All right? The LSU dislike intensified over the last 2 years. We all know what happened with the Aliva Gate and the hurricane, and we all know that they came in here and pulled out a win because Florida's was inept offensively and celebrated on the field like crazy men, as they should have, as Florida did the year before. Some of us don't have a lot of respect for Ed Orgeron as a coach. Not a big fan of his. Not a big fan of LSU. A lot of people there I do like. But the Miami hatred goes back, to, obviously, to the 70s or 60s, if you're old as I am. And that hatred's totally different. But when LSU plays Miami, do you say, well, the heck with it. I can't figure out who to root for. I'm just going to root for the conference. What has the conference ever done for you? What has the SEC ever done for you? Nothing. So I don't know. Help me out. I will take any of your emails or tweets or anything about that. I'm curious where you go in those games. Who do you root for in those games? I threw this out at my wife Monday night and said, hey, all right, let me give you a perfect one. Alabama-Louisville to open the season. You going to root for Bobby Petrino? I mean, not a good person. Not good with the media. Or are you going to root for Nick Saban, who I've kind of warmed up to a little bit, but man, aren't we tired of Alabama winning everything? I think that's a no-brainer root for Alabama. But these are questions that keep me up at night because I have a hard time sleeping. All right, let me get to three things before we finish this thing off. Number one, I don't know, like, we don't know DJ Durkin very well. Even those of us who covered the team during the Will Muschamp years, just because we didn't have a lot of access to those guys. He seemed like a decent guy. We got a little more access to him during the bowl week. I've always respected the fact that that team played its guts out for him. And I will be perfectly honest, every year we've gotten a helmet from DJ Durkin and Maryland for our golf tournament. I don't know that he knew about it. I think the equipment guy might have handled that. But that has nothing to do with my feelings about what's happened up there. As I'm recording this, the word is he's going to be fired in minutes. We'll see what happens. I don't think there's any way he survives. And if he's already been fired, that's a bold statement. But it goes back. There's certainly this culture of mistreating players. There's a fine line there. I was listening today to Scott Cochran, the strength coach at Alabama, and the way he talked to players, which was pretty demeaning, but that was okay because he didn't quite cross the line. But then you cross the line when you tell your players on your team to drag a guy off the field who has passed out. You've gone way over the line, and a lot of it goes back to, and I know I think Dan Wetzel or Dan Wolken, sometimes I confuse the two guys, wrote a column about how the secrecy of college football, sometimes these guys just get too secret. They get too secret for their own good. There needs to be more transparency. And it goes to injuries. I mean, Dan Mullen's a guy who won't tell us about injuries. We know that Jacob Copeland had meniscus surgery and is going to be out for about 3 weeks. We've got it from two different sources, one who's impeccable, one who... I don't know the other source because somebody else got it, but the one I have, I know it's true. How is that affecting the football team not to tell us? There needs to be more transparency, and I think in a perfect world, we'd have a commissioner and we'd have the NCAA would say, look, because of the gambling situation, you guys have to disclose all injuries and you have to do them in a timely manner. Once the family knows, you need to get it out. We just need to know. It goes back to what I talked about to one of the clubs. When coaches hold back their players from talking to the media and their coaches from talking to the media, you know who gets hurt the most? Not the media. not us. You guys get hurt. Stories aren't as good because you don't have what they really are thinking. You don't have, you want to get to know these guys, you're not allowed to. I think that's enough soapbox for today. Let's go to something a little bit more calm for number two. And that was the PGA Championship. It was so much fun to watch. And Tiger dominated it, even though he didn't win. We all know that. It was really, I think the ratings are up 69%. It was really intriguing, and I enjoyed the heck out of it. I saw Jason Sobel write that here's, because the Ryder Cup first eight are set, and then you get four picks, and who he believed they should pick, or Jim Furyk being the captain. Phil would be the iffy guy there. You know, I'm not sure Phil's game, and I said this before, I think Tiger wins a major before Phil does, because Phil just doesn't seem to have this. I don't know what it is about him. Maybe it's the shirts. I don't know. But you can't – it's still good. He's got the experience. I can live with Phil on that team. Tiger, no question in my mind, you got to pick Tiger. Tony Finau and Kevin Kisner, I agree with all those. That's who I'd go with, no problem. I know there's some other people that don't think that they should go that way, but and the Ryder Cup should be really spectacular, no question about it. The golf this weekend fired me up to go play, so I went and played nine holes yesterday. Actually, didn't play miserably for a guy who's really been struggling. And number three, there's nothing like that first weekend of exhibition football in the NFL, and you're like, God, because you were so desperate. You watched Johnny Manziel's game in the CFL because you're so desperate for football. And you're like, all right, here we go. NFL exhibition game. And then you get about 5 minutes in, you go, let's see if there's a rerun of Andy Griffith on. It's boring stuff, unless you're covering the team. That for the fans who are covering the teams, or the fans, the media is covering the team, it's all vital. We all know that. But for the fans, even of those teams, you're like, yeah, well, it didn't count. It's not in the game. The third weekend is always the one where it's interesting. Where they leave the guys in for like two and a half, three quarters. But even then, you don't know. It's hard to figure it out. But I always refer to them as NFL exhibition games, which they don't like because they don't like. That's just me. It's the kind of guy I am. Want to thank Tate Casey. Want to thank. Let's try that again. In 3, 2, 1. Want to thank Tate Casey for coming on the show. Great stuff from him. And thank all of you for clicking on and spending some time with me. We'll be back with another one next week. And again, once the season starts, twice a week. So I know you're excited about that. I'm excited. I can't wait. I cannot wait for the season. It hasn't been the usual, God, it's never going to get here. But it's starting to get, like I talked about the dog days, it's starting to get a little doggy right now. You know, because when you say, oh, well, it's only a week and a half until the first game. Well, not really. The first weekend, that August 25th, it's not much. But will I watch it? You're darn right I will. Absolutely. Be watching. Actually, I'm playing in a golf tournament that day, so I'll get home. I was thinking about this. I think it's Colorado State, Hawaii at 7:30 or something. What a perfect way to finish up a good day. Right? So I'm ready for it to get here. I know you guys are too, and it should be a lot of fun. We'll be back next week with another Dooley Noted podcast. Until then, I'm Pat Dooley, the sports columnist of the Gainesville Sun. I am deep, I am way back, and I am out of here.